Robert thing.
Thursday morning at 9.
Good morning, Frederick.
Toucher and Rich talk basketball with the Celtics president of operations, Danny Ainge. Brought to you by GE, official data and analytics partner of the Boston Celtics. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Fred, hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
What's going on over there? Fire?
Ron is dead.
How you doing, Snakey Leg?
High five from everyone.
Took it to the limit.
I have a horrible foot fetish.
Do you? Let's go, Red Sox. Let's go, Red Sox.
Hear me like a bow, bow, bow.
Go, Red Sox.
Hear me like a bow, bow, bow.
Wall dick, well, yeah.
Now, that's why they call me country.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Because if you take the word listen and you scramble it up, it makes another word, which is silent. Chico, what's the biggest room in the world? And you know, I'm thinking. Now let's put this back into perspective. I'm 5 sake bombs in. There's a lot of things going on in my mind right now. And I'm thinking. He just stopped me and said, hey, mate, the biggest room in the world is room for improvement. Then the horn's gotta come in, whatever it may be. Bam, 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 bam. Just to catch you, I got 6 seconds.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are the Toucher and Rich radio program. 617-779-0985. A big show on the way today.
Starting the day off with a little Pitbull wisdom.
There you go. That's you got to have a little Pitbull doing an inspirational speech at a real estate conference.
I spent way too much on Pitbull's, too much time on Pitbull's Twitter last night. I just started thinking about like some of the dumb things he was saying at that real estate and wealth expo, whatever that thing was that he was speaking at in Toronto. And I was like, you know what, let's just go check out the old Twitter account. And he is dropping massive amounts of knowledge. Like philosophy, more than anything. Just words to live by. As a matter of fact, there was one in there that said, the plans sometimes don't plan out, but somehow plans out.
Mm-hmm. That shows you.
Mm-hmm. Let that one sink in. And it's, how about
he was part of the A-team. He loves it when a plan comes together.
He does, right? He's like the Hannibal of hip-hop artists. He said, before we would give up our fingerprints so they could find us. But now question is, what are they trying to find?
They're trying to find your talent.
Let that sink in.
And they've come up empty.
That doesn't make sense.
Come on, fine.
I spent way too much time on his Twitter account, and I just, one after the next, I'm just sitting there going, all right, well, this is a complete and utter nonsense. If you look for something, it hides. That was one you just threw out there.
I may have to change the playlist when I run now.
Why?
You might have convinced me.
There's hidden messages in his songs.
No, but I mean, keep on running, Johnny.
No, that's what it was. That's what I thought he was saying to me.
John, if you're looking for a new playlist, it hides.
We have to change things up. Because I'll be thinking about, that's not healthy. Thinking about this stuff while you're running, it just makes you not want to run at all.
I wonder how he got signed. What was happening, or how he got his first cameo. I would imagine he was doing like cameos on records.
No, I think that, it's funny, because back in the day, I think he was known as kind of like one of these hard street hustler type rappers, and I believe his style has somewhat changed to be a little top 40. I think, if I'm not mistaken, his earlier stuff was more about like living hard and dealing drugs. And then all of a sudden it was like, hey, I'm top 40 guy who'll show up for 5 seconds on your song and rap during the verse or whatever.
I just remember he hit a guy.
Well, that was that video.
That's on stage.
That video legitimately rules. Like, he's in the middle of a show and he's rapping, and some guy is up at the front throwing like dollar bills at his feet, which I guess is the ultimate sign of disrespect. So he gets up on stage while Pitbull is doing his show and starts throwing dollars at him, and Pitbull reaches back, decks the guy in the face, absolutely just knocks the guy out, and continues to rap without missing a beat. Now, that was cool as hell. Despite of all the stuff you've seen Pitbull do, that was legitimately a cool moment.
Yeah.
And then he said,
Come on, baby. It's so great. Go, baby. Uh-oh, baby. No, baby. Yeah, baby. Now, jiggly, baby.
There's some deep messages in there.
Yeah, it's it just says jiggle it and tickle it. It's all a bunch of rhymes.
You know,
wiggle it, tickle it, and then what else?
Those can be Barney lyrics. Okay, no, no, baby, yeah, yeah, baby, go, go, baby, let me tickle it, baby.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Brilliant. It must be nice not to have to put any effort into anything that you do.
Ever, yes.
Yeah, just, and everyone goes, yeah, wow, what's the point of even learning how to rap? Scott, go ahead.
Hey, Fred.
Yeah.
Hey, I want two people that watch your show, you dumbass. I'm sorry, I got one drop. Hang on. Lulu, sit down. I got a bass around here. She's only a year old, Lulu. Anyway.
What?
I watch you guys all the time.
Thank you.
Rich, and Wallach. And it's so cool that you guys get me till about 10 o'clock every morning and prevent you from drinking.
Is this Kodzy?
Yes. No, seriously, beer.
Is this Kodzy?
No, it's Scott from Barrington, New Hampshire.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So,
right.
So you watch us till 10 and to not drink?
No, I'm just kidding with it. No. It's a joke.
Oh, okay.
No, one day, I don't know what time it was. You can bring the tape up. You said there's probably only two people on the planet to watch our show.
Oh, well, we appreciate that.
Listening to it on the radio.
Oh, well,
I'm the second person.
I'd rather have
it's
you listen
on
to us
every day. I do my housework and everything. I stay home and take care of my kids.
Okay.
And today I had a good day. You know, tail after up the Masters. You know, I'm like traumatized. Ricky Fowler didn't win. Anyway, but you guys are great. I just want to call and say thanks. Wallach, what are you doing?
I'm just sitting here listening to your wisdom, man.
I'm just going off, right?
Right, you that's know, all.
Seriously, you said it one day. I'm not ragging on you, but you said there's only two people to watch the show. No, I watch it every day.
Well, thank you. Please listen to us.
I could probably work in your studio and tell you what you guys are doing good.
Right. Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you for being a loyal fan of the show.
No,
we appreciate that. I kind of went in a million directions, and I'm not quite sure what's happening.
Right.
But maybe he's like Pitbull. He's got hidden messages in his words.
Mommy got an ass like a donkey with a monkey. Look like King Kong. Welcome to the crib real fast. That's what it is with the women down here.
Hidden messages.
Eddie Money has a new reality show out, and Rich had me watch it to see if there was anything in it.
I watched it the first time, and I was like, after watching it, I was like, you know what, I'm going to give this to Fred. I'm going to let him see it, because Fred is obviously very, you know, he does the Eddie Money,
he's tuned into the man's psyche.
He's tuned into the man's psyche, yes. It was a situation where almost it was willed, Eddie Money's reality was willed into existence by Fred, because he just made this character out of him, and then we found out these real interviews, and it was exactly the way Fred was making a parody of him.
I think it's one of those things, if you can get three episodes of it, you can get enough to start playing stuff, because it's so set up. Like, everything is so set up on that show.
Okay, there is a plot hole that is so... Okay, so it's about him and his family. Now, he's got, like, five kids. They all live at home.
They all live at home, and I'm trying to get them out.
Yeah, and it's...
I'm making sausages and pasta.
Yeah, and that's, like, the extent of what anybody says. It's mostly about his kids. And there's one part, I mean, reality TV is so ridiculous now, and people can, it's so see-through. Unless it's on a major network, it's so horribly done, and you can tell what's contrived and what's set up. There's a part where his son is the drummer for his band, and they're supposed to go to this sound check, and they're looking all over for their son, and then they edit it to make it look like the son is walking the dog out back, and he's supposed to be all aloof, and they're like, I can't find him, let's go leave for the sound check, he probably left early. So they go down to the sound check, and then the son's like, where is everybody? So 2 hours later, they're at the sound check. They're like, where's our son? I thought he was going to be here. And the whole time I'm yelling, cell phone! Call him! What are you doing? This is the worst plot hole ever. Where's our son? I can't find him. We thought he'd be here. It's been 2 hours. Call him!
Did you see the one?
It's the worst writing ever. Like, just, I hate to break it to you, but this technology's been around for 20 years.
Did you
call him on his cell phone?
One thing you can fake is, okay, so he has five kids. One of his daughter, who, you know, she's getting kind of fat.
Right.
That he said in that interview. She sings for him. One kid plays guitar, and the drummer is all. But he has one kid.
I'm wondering if you're going to find the one thing hysterical about the show that I found, and it has nothing to do with Eddie Money.
Okay, well, I was just the kid who does the electronic music's eyes.
Oh, okay.
Is what I was. I mean, you can't fake that.
Yeah, no, no. But he's like out on the episode. You can tell they don't include him that much because he's just like, we're going to leave him alone.
Just like, don't get too close to him. No. You might find something you don't like.
Right. This one is just like, I make electronic music all day, but I don't want to play it for anyone.
And his eyes, are like red all the way around. He has like raccoon eyes, just like red and dead inside.
But there's one legit, like my stomach, I laughed like hard, is that he's got his oldest son randomly is like this 32-year-old bodybuilder.
Oh, and he starts, well, I thought about playing that one. All right, so he has five kids, and the oldest one is this like...
It looks nothing like the rest of them.
No,
oh, boy. Yeah,
okay.
that ain't mine.
All right.
So he's just this fat guy, and he's in the living room with 135 pounds doing... what is it? Queen jerk,
right?
Just doing them, and then he's like, puts his eyes... They're like, how much is that? He goes, 135.
And it's like anytime the camera, he doesn't talk. Just anytime the camera's around, he makes sure that he's lifting some sort of weights. He's like pushing weights in the backyard. They have no speaking part. He really has no role in the entire show. But he's just this weird older like son of theirs who lives in the house, and all he does is like lift weights. And he looks nothing like the rest of them. And he doesn't talk. He's just like, everything will go up to him and say, what are you doing? Just lifting weights.
Yeah, I he was a result of a county fair in Iowa.
Oh. And like you see, like the family photo, and they just kind of stick Cooper in the back.
Oh, they stick him way in the back.
It's like weightlifting Cooper, and he's like not even like strong. He's just kind of like a fat guy.
Yeah,
but he's like, I'm the weightlifter.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That was the one part that made me legitimately laugh.
But the best part is I know we're talking about show no one saw, but that he's in the living room.
Right, he's in the living room lifting weights.
He's not even, and it's like a bar, you know, a bar with big. 45.
Yeah, it's the bench press bar.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And so, but he's not in like a gym. He's in the living room, of the living room.
I imagine, Fred, they were filming a scene involving like Eddie Money and his wife like talking, and he just brought his like weight bench down into the middle of the scene just so the world would know that he totally kicks ass and lifts weights.
Yeah, because they describe everyone's personality and talents, and his is just like, oh, he's the big brother. He's the oldest.
He's the one we're going to hide in the attic.
Yeah. You don't want to investigate him too much. We'll catch up with everything that happened last night.
Toucher.
Is this what you want?
And Rich.
Are you happy now?
Toucher and Rich.
Ah, sick.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed with Toucher and Rich.
.985 The Sports Hub, or Toucher and Rich. Rich, what is going on?
Well, so after weeks of info slowly trickling out, it's now pretty apparent that Bill Belichick is not and will never be welcome on the Gronk bus. Reports flying over the last few weeks that Gronk was not happy with the grinding work environment that Bill Belichick had created at Foxborough, and Belichick isn't happy with Gronk's passive-aggressive Instagram posts. Wow, as those words are coming out of my mouth, they sound even more ridiculous than ever. But yesterday, Karen Garigian of the Boston Herald painted a broader picture as to the root of why Rob is so upset with Belichick. And guess what? Just like everything else this offseason, it all comes back to Alex Guerrero. According to the Herald, at one point early last season, Belichick chastised Gronk in front of the players for being a TB12 client. So maybe that was Belichick's not-so-subtle way of trying to keep everyone from jumping ship on the team's training staff. Mike Giardi reported earlier in the offseason that the Patriots players, specifically Rob Gronkowski and Tom Brady, were miserable under Belichick's regime, while Tommy Curran reported Gronk felt, quote, persecuted to a degree last season. So Tommy Curran also shed a little bit more light on this, everything that's been happening, with an article he wrote yesterday where he said, quote, the switch to Guerrero's resistance-based band worked, and it was a sea change for Gronk, but he bought in, and the results by the end of the season were apparent. They weren't so apparent during training camp, though. Gronk struggled early in camp. He played poorly, and he knew that he was playing poorly. His body didn't feel right. During that period of time, Gronk was called out by the Patriots coaches in front of teammates. His training switch was derided. That didn't go over well with him, and it still sticks in his craw. He was doing what he felt was best for him and his body, and it was being mocked. The Gronk dust-up was part of the landscape, which led to Guerrero being exiled. When two of the team's most important players are eschewing, am I saying that right? The strength coaches that the rest of the team is required to do, it's going to go sideways with the head coach, and it did. But changing the rules surrounding Guerrero, who's been around the team since 2005, did not sit well with Brady. While Guerrero is at the center of this tug of war, what's truly at issue is less about him and more about philosophy and control. It's old school weight training versus new school pliability and flexibility. It's a soft tissue expert Guerrero versus an on-staff strength coaches paid by the team that were working in concert with the trainers and medical staff. So they're basically saying that the resolution from Belichick resulted in Guerrero being marginalized at precisely the time that Brady and Guerrero were promoting the TB12 method. And that resolution didn't resolve anything. So we're finding out more that, once again, the root of all of this goes back to Alex Guerrero.
If I'm not mistaken, Gronkowski was not great at the beginning of the season.
Well, that's what they're saying, is that that's what Bill Belichick used as the reason.
But not just training camp, but at the beginning of the regular season, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember that being the case, but I know that during training camp there were reports that he was struggling, and even admittedly so. That's why Bill Belichick took that opportunity to use that against him, the whole TB12 method.
I think about the first half of the season, Gronkowski struggled a little bit.
He had two big games, but he struggled. Hang on, that's backwards. Never mind. Yes, he did. He struggled a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
Kansas City, he got shut down. He had a big game against New Orleans, and then 89 yards, 80 yards, 83 yards, 51, 57, 74. We're now into November. Three catches for 37, you know, eight catches for 82. In reality, he only had three games of 100 yards or more.
And that was at the end of the season, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they're part
Buffalo and Pittsburgh, yeah.
Well, part of the article, they talk about that Pittsburgh game. And I guess earlier in the season, Tommy Curran went to go ask him about his new stretching routine. And it was right after Guerrero had been exiled from the sidelines. And he knew not to talk about it. He said he didn't want to talk about it. But then he had that ridiculous catch during the Pittsburgh game. And Tommy Curran asked him about it, and he said, I couldn't have done any of that stuff without any of my new stretching exercises. So basically, once again, without saying it, praising Alex Guerrero and kind of going against the grain of what I believe he was told not to talk about.
Yeah, and if you look at him now, he's super thin for Gronkowski, which I never believed that he would stop powerlifting. I thought that all he wanted to do was be super jacked. But now look at him. He's very thin.
Yeah.
He's not as jacked. It's a little disappointing because I like to see my man jacked, but he ain't that diesel right now.
Yeah. So this is just kind of more of what we knew, is that right now there is a divide, and it all comes from Alex Guerrero. And once that started, it becomes more about just the training itself, but a little bit of a power struggle.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, egos get in the way, and then everything gets blown out. But if you just look, the root of it all has been TB12.
Which means that, Tom Brady is the root of this schism in the team. I mean, without Tom Brady, there's no Alex Guerrero, and then there you go. So that ultimately is what has caused these problems.
Belichick will never change. I mean, it would be to his benefit. It would be to the team's benefit. You will keep the window open longer. Obviously, the feeling is people are training differently. If Belichick bent a little bit, maybe this changes. Maybe, you know, there are another 2-3 years. Maybe there isn't as much internal strife. But, I mean, I can see it from Belichick's point of view. I've been massively successful. I'm the best head coach in the history of the NFL. My way has worked exclusively for 20 years, why should I change?
And then you see the first half of the season, for the most part, your second best player on the team not doing what you believe that he's capable of doing.
He stayed healthy.
I understand that, but healthy, not healthy, is he productive on the field? And for the most part, he wasn't. Early on, he wasn't at all. As a matter of fact, he really wasn't that otherworldly Gronk until those two games, Buffalo Pittsburgh, yeah, so at the end of the year.
If you're Belichick,
so you can see it from Belichick's point of view.
Oh, absolutely.
But if he bent, I think we can all agree, if he was able to bend and work here with Guerrero and Brady and Gronkowski and figure out a way to assimilate things in, I don't think we would have nearly this much trouble, and I think people wouldn't worry about the long-term health of the organization as far as success.
Okay, but if you maybe Belichick looks at it by position and he says, all right, Brady's a quarterback, and you know this is a different kind of physicality involved in the position, and then he sees that Gronkowski isn't himself, and knows that he's doing this new training regimen. So I could see being like, what the hell? You know, you're not playing well.
Isn't the overriding factor here, as far as the offseason concerned, that why don't they just pay him and just make this go away? Pay Rob Gronkowski. He's worth it.
Again, it goes against everything the Patriots have done the last 2 decades.
It's different.
I understand.
He's a different level of player.
I just got through discussing this in a different way, but it's the same philosophy. Our philosophy is you pay Brady and maybe one other person, and it's cost-effective to keep Gronk at the salary he's at, because maybe you get a couple extra special teams players, maybe you get some depth in the secondary.
And you make him miserable.
Obviously, but you know as well as I do that this is the way the Patriots have done it. This is why they've been able to create such depth in the organization, is because their star players, including Brady, have not played at cost.
And Gronkowski,
they haven't played for salary that a lot of people think they're justified in having.
And Gronkowski signed that deal. I mean, he is responsible for doing what he did. And so say he's a malcontent. I mean, if he plays, he plays. I mean, how much longer does he think that's going to happen? I think money or not, that it's only a year or two.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the offseason program's right around the corner here. I mean, we'll see how serious he is.
I guess
if he stays away or he doesn't stay away, if he wants to make a statement here, he has the opportunity to do it. Mandatory minicamp isn't until next month.
There has to be some sort of way where they can both, like, coexist. Having the type of regimens that you want from your own doctors within the Patriots organization that Belichick obviously wants, and Alex Guerrero. Because whatever Guerrero's done with Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski has worked. They've stayed healthy. So there's got to be some part of that.
It's going to have to be Gronk bending. It's going to have to be Gronk coming into the Patriots way of doing things. Because as we're seeing, Belichick's not moving.
Well,
this is what he is. This is what he does.
And then also, Gronkowski stayed healthy, but he wasn't as effective.
He had a big year. He had a good year this year.
He had 1,000 yards, barely over 1,000 yards receiving.
That's a good year.
I said, over 100 yards only 3 times during the regular season.
Okay, but it's still a good year for him.
In the Super Bowl, he had a monster day.
It's not a good year for him comparatively to the other years if you go by a game-by-game basis.
Well, it is if you look at his health. It's one of his best years, if you look at his health.
I understand about the health, but if he's underperforming at some point...
For Gronk, yes.
Yeah, for the best tight end in football, if he's underperforming, then, you know, it's... staying healthy is great, but... And how many games did he play last year?
All of them.
Oh, he played all of them
last
year?
Yeah, I believe.
All right. Oh, yeah, the suspension. Okay.
Well, other than, of course, after the Buffalo game.
Right.
You know, he played all the ones that he physically could play.
Right.
Yes.
All right. Here are the headlines.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And, Rich, what else is going on?
So the first exciting series, the Red Sox season, just lost a very important piece.
High fly, twisting into left field. Martinez back to the track, back to the wall. Plays it off the 10. Looked like it struck him. Here comes the run. They're going to wave around Robertson. He's going to score. A flip. There's nobody there out of the glove of Bogarts. He has to chase it, and it almost went into the dugout. And he did go into the dugout.
Yeah, he did.
That is Nesson, and so the Red Sox announced yesterday that Xander Bogaerts has been placed on the 10-day disabled list after injuring his ankle right there in the 7th inning of Sunday's 8-7 win over Tampa Bay at Fenway Park. As you heard there, Bogaerts slid right into that Rays dugout chasing a bad throw. He suffered a small crack in the talus bone of his left ankle. He's expected to miss 10 to 14 days. Dombrowski said that doctors have told him that that type of bone crack can be compared to a deep bone bruise in the terms of healing time. They expect him to be back in 2 weeks. So in the meantime, the Red Sox are getting ready to take on the New York Yankees, and the New York media are having a field day with Giancarlo Stanton's struggles. After striking out 5 times for the 2nd time in this short season, the front page of the New York Daily News sports section has this picture of Giancarlo Stanton superimposed over Fenway Park, and the headline reads, "The Curse of the Stantino." Shaughnessy must absolutely love that.
He's jealous. Shaughnessy's got to be really jealous. He doesn't have anything like that he can sink his teeth into yet.
Right. If only there could be Photoshops for all of Dan Shaughnessy's headlines, well, it would be phenomenal.
He needs something bad to happen with them.
Yes.
He needs this.
He needs the Yankees to sweep this series. See, look, they beat up on the Cupcakes. They meet a real team. They're not ready. Alex Cora is not ready. This team isn't ready.
Tomato cans at the beginning of the season.
I just love it how yesterday there was an article and it was like, we should have seen this coming with Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, that's just awesome. Like 9 games in and they're already declaring it a failure. So God bless them.
Oh my God.
It's fun to watch. It's from the outside looking in. It is fun to watch. But as far as Stanton is concerned, he just thinks he had a bad week.
Just got to look at it as a bad week. Season's much longer than a week, so a couple good games could turn it around and help us win.
Do you expect the fans to be as hard on you as they've been this week?
Sure, yeah, they're not gonna cheer for that, so what do you expect?
So he doesn't seem to me like a guy who would completely lose his composure at the plate because of what the media is saying. We've seen players that it happened before, but how amazing would it be if that was the case?
Well, yeah,
is that it's because he was in Miami and he was so far away from any kind of criticism or anything of the like, and that's the reason.
Caring, yeah.
Right, he was able to just be loose and play the way he wanted to play, and now that he goes to New York, he's just ruined.
I mean, it could happen. I don't know enough about him. I mean, he was in Miami for all that time. I mean, he's going to hit home runs. I don't think he can help but hit home runs, but he struck out 5 times.
Twice.
20 times in 42 at-bats to start the season.
What was the stat about, like, he struck out more in one season than who's the...
Joe DiMaggio. In 1 year. Okay. He struck out more times in the first week of the season than DiMaggio struck out in the whole season. That's not fair. None of this is fair.
Dan is telling me that Tony Gwynn had 1 3 strikeout game in his career.
Right.
That's great.
Right. I think they're a little bit different kind of hitter, but
how?
Yeah.
I know. Tony Gwynn just basically
never struck out because he was great at just fouling pitches off.
Right. He basically used to aim the ball.
By the way, speaking of the Marlins and how they're doing now that Stanton is gone, the paid attendance for the Mets Marlins game was the lowest crowd ever. For lowest attendance ever at Marlins Park. It was 7,003 people. Last night, the worst attendance was over 10,000 people on April 1st of last year. So, okay, so if that's
7,003 paid attendance, doesn't mean everyone's there.
If that's paid, you're probably looking at realistically 3,000 people at that park.
Well, they've had games where, again, that you could count the amount of people in the park, which means that it was under 1,000, and you could easily count the amount of people that were in seats.
Well, Chris Sale, who pitches tonight, believes that Alex Cora has been a big part of his team's success over the last few weeks.
He's got a good way of keeping it fun, keeping it loose, involving everybody, you know, getting guys together and doing fun things, whether people going to playing golf or going out to dinner or whatever it was. He had a good way of keeping it loose, and that's, for us, that's important.
Keeping it loose! That's the way Alex Cora runs
things. He took the team out golfing? How the hell do you do that?
Maybe it was during spring training.
They have a golf outing every year at spring training.
Well, Glavin and Maddox and Smoltz, every off day, every time they had an off day in spring training, would go play golf.
When Maddox wasn't too busy wiping himself in the bathroom stall and then throwing it over the other side, which we've heard stories of.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Maddox was disgusting.
Smoltz told this story.
Yeah, he used to sit in the bathroom stall and he would, do number two. He'd wipe himself and then throw the leftovers over the door to the person sitting in the stall next to him.
He was usually a rookie, if I remember correctly. It wasn't Smoltz, but yeah, Smoltz told this story to someone. I think we actually played this on the air.
We had Smoltz on our show.
Okay, there you go.
Because I heard rumors about Maddox being the most disgusting person in baseball. And Smoltz wasn't going to hold back. And so, he told us that story. There was another one, too, but all involved, his own, bodily stuff.
So, he was the Izzo of the Braves.
Yes, he was the Izzo of the Braves. That's a great way to say it. He was the Izzo of the Braves,
Who wipes themselves and then throws it over at someone?
Greg Maddox, apparently.
It's not like... There was one person in that team that couldn't beat the hell out of them.
Athletes that have been away from home since they were 16.
I mean,
with no one to check them?
Do that to Otis Nixon. See how that works out.
Otis Nixon would just throw a fit.
Just straight up just start flipping out.
And then you find the pipe.
Yeah. Good old Otis Nixon just running up the wall.
Handsome.
So game one, he was a very good looking man. So game one of the Yankee series is tonight. This should be actually a fun one to watch. Sale versus Severino, first pitch. is at 7:10. And some good news for the Celtics. Yesterday it was reported that Marcus Smart had reevaluation on his torn right UCL yesterday in New York and is expected to receive clearance to return to game action on April 27th. That's very specific, but it's 6 weeks from the original injury. Smart has been cleared to start light non-contact shooting. If this is true, if you take a look at how the dates all match up, he's more than likely going to be available for the final one or two games of a seven-game first-round series. Based upon scheduling, it would look like the earliest date for a Game 7 would be April 27th, right, when he was scheduled to come back. Still no word on when Game 1 of the playoffs is going to be against a team yet to be determined, but looking at the schedule, it would more than likely be Sunday. However, there's a chance the Bull Gang could pull together another one and have a Celtics Saturday matinee.
It'd have to be the first game out of the shoot it on Saturday for it to work.
Before removing the parquet for Game 2 of the Bruins Saturday night. By the way, speaking of the Bull Gang, I told you guys this off the air yesterday. This is a crazy story. So, Grizzlick, his father is on the Bull Gang, which I guess he'd been doing that for like 20-something years. But, you know, he lives in Charlestown, but they had a little thing on him. I don't know if it was during the Bruins game or it was somewhere else that I saw it. But he'd been doing it for all these years, and now he's removing the parquet and setting up the ice for his son when he plays. Thought it was kind of a cool story. So one other thing we also learned about who the Celtics are going to ultimately play in the first round is that if they beat the Warriors, then they are not going to end up playing
Wizards.
The Warriors. I'm sorry, not the Warriors, the Wizards. If they beat the Wizards, then they're not going to play the Wizards now, in the playoffs.
The way I looked at it this morning, if the Wizards lose tonight, they're pretty much locked into the 8th seed.
That's right. So the Celtics will not match up with them.
But if they win, they could finish 6, 7, or 8.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right now 6 is still in play for them.
Okay.
If they win out and the two teams in front of them lose.
I think the odds on, right now, if you look at the odds, it's most likely going to be the Miami Heat that the Celtics will be taking on. And to me, look at the three teams, that's the matchup I want. I want the Miami Heat. I want to take on Kelly Olynyk. I want nothing to do with Giannis Antetokounmpo. I want nothing to do with Bradley Beal. So bring on the Heat. And right now, chances are in their favor.
At the moment. That could all change by tomorrow morning, but at the moment, that's what it looks like.
Yep.
All right. Enjoy football, food, and more with Tom Brady at the Best Buddies Challenge, June 1st and 2nd. Register today at TomBrady.com. What else do we have?
We have Bruins injury news, an update to who may be ready for the playoffs come Thursday night.
All right. We will have that for you in just a moment. .985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what's going on with the Bruins?
So here we go. Real season starts for the Bees on Thursday night. Game one against the Leafs in their quest for the Cup. And we all wonder at this point what team we're going to get. The one that's been dominant for the last several months or the one that coasted during the last week and a half. Either way, it looks like they're going to be fairly healthy. It looks like Don Sweeney yesterday gave some updates on some of the players who have yet to return to the ice.
Well, they're all working that way. You know, we got a couple days to practice and see where they all kind of get to. Hopefully they'll all be available.
He was asked about Rick Nash, Riley Nash, and Sean Corrali, and it sounds like, hopefully, as you heard there, they're all going to be available. That would be obviously a good thing. So Rick Nash is, I know that he's been speaking to the press. That's always a good sign. And hopefully on Thursday night, you'll be able to see all those guys. I know Riley Nash, however, did you say it was 40 stitches in his head after they got the puck?
It was, yes, close to 40.
Okay. So have you had any time to think about your confidence, or have you changed how you feel about this team heading into Thursday night's game?
I'm hoping that they were just mentally fatigued. You hear that a lot in that at the end of the season, they had that run of every other day for how long? 2 months?
Yeah.
And so
last 4 to 6 weeks of the season.
And then you lock in a playoff position, and then, you know, maybe the last four games of the season, you're just focused on the playoffs and you're kind of running out of steam. So I'm hoping that maybe 3 days away gets you back, you get healthy, and that kickstarts things again. Because I was looking at something on ESPN, and it said the reason your team won't win the Stanley Cup, and it was all this statistical stuff. And with the Bruins, they said there's really not anything that I can point out. They had trouble finding something statistically to point out. Not that that matters, but just an example of why they should win is they really had to struggle to find something statistically that was a flaw with this team.
See, I find this fascinating because 3 weeks ago, we had this discussion, and you were saying they should win. They should beat Tampa Bay. They should beat Washington. I mean, you and I went back and forth on this, and you said basically this is a Stanley Cup team. And we've gone from that to where you are now, which is very worried.
Well, it's a bad taste in your mouth.
I understand that.
Like that, but you'd like to think that a team that you saw playing the way that they did for the past 2 months didn't have that in them.
They look tired. They look like they needed a break, and that's what these 3 days are.
Well, I mean they played a Florida team that had nothing to play for, right? And if they would have gotten the lead, they probably win that game. Here's the deal: I wished that they had been eliminated from the first seed. Before that Florida game.
Sure.
And then they could have just basically rested that whole game. I think maybe it was unfair. And now Florida played the night before and had to fly into Boston. But they had nothing to play for. And so, you know, they're maybe a little bit more relaxed. But maybe you can't judge them on a back-to-back where it's the last game of the season and they know that they have to turn around and play on Thursday. So there's a way that you can make that that it's understandable.
Yeah, and then you see things that kind of jump out at you that don't make you feel so good, seeing that guys like it was the Pastrnak, Bergeron, Marchand line, I think for like the past 2 weeks, they were combined for a minus 20. And I think until that point, they had gone months without even allowing an even strength goal. So you see that, and those are veterans, and you like to think, or at least two of the three are veterans, and you like to think that they just don't have that in them. But maybe because they're veterans, they know, as we've heard in the past, when to take their foot off the gas, when to maybe not try as hard, and to conserve a little bit of energy. And I like to hope that's what's going on.
Look at the overall body of work. I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to what you just said, Rich. They have a top five scoring defense, a top five power play, and a top five penalty kill. And they were sixth in the NHL in goals per game. I mean, that says a ton.
And no, they should beat Toronto.
They should beat Tampa Bay. And you know what? They should beat. At this point, watching what they've done, I think I might give them the edge against Tampa Bay as well. It's not as good a team as I think Tampa Bay is, and they are really good. I mean, I'd give the Bruins an even shot or better to win that series. So,
no, the Bruins should win two rounds. They should. And if they don't, it's a huge disappointment based on that regular season.
They're deep. They're deep not only talent-wise, they're deep scoring-wise.
They're going to be healthy for the most part.
They're going to be healthy for the most part.
Yep.
Their defensive core is deep. They got a lot of defensemen that do a lot of different things. You have stay-at-home defensemen. You have offensive defensemen. You have Zdeno Chara, who's a Hall of Fame defenseman. You have one of the best young defensemen in the game. Maybe the best rookie defenseman in the game. I mean, this is a team that is built to go a long way, and I'm not nearly as worried about this as you are, Fred. I the more I see this team, and I understand they did not look good over the last couple of weeks, but I think they were marking time until it matters, which is this Thursday.
That's what you hope. And you hope that the guys that have been injured and been out a while can get their legs under them. You hope that the kids don't fold under the pressure, or that they still have the energy to go out there. You know, because they're not used to playing this amount of games.
And then there's, like, always the thing that creeps into your head, too, when you see, like, star players. Like, I just mentioned that top line, you know, like, being uncharacteristically bad over the last several days. That thing creeps in my head, like, phantom injury. Injury we don't know about. Underreported.
They wouldn't be playing.
So you're torturing yourself.
Yes.
Now.
They wouldn't have played.
You know what? It's their fault. I'm torturing myself. Because when you limp into the postseason the way they did after playing so well, your mind tends to wander.
No, they wouldn't have played anyone.
Jesus.
No, there's no unreported injury that they're not telling anyone. Believe me.
Although it is kind of fun watching you lose it a little.
Everyone's kind of losing their mind. It was just such a horrible way to go into the postseason. I'm with you, John. I mean, for the most part, when sanity kicks in, I think it is because of the veteran presence. They just took the foot off the gas. They don't want to go too hard. They want to conserve energy. They don't want to get hurt. That, I think, is more than likely the reason. However,
When the room gets quiet, you're sitting by yourself, those little things tend to creep into your head, and I don't
like it. Why wait to have that rock in your stomach? You're already 48 hours ahead of the game. Good for you.
It's because the next several months, hopefully, suck as far as your physical well-being.
No, this series is not... Bruins aren't going to put this team away in five. This is going to be a struggle, but they're better.
As great as playoff hockey is, you just as a spectator, there's nothing that makes your stomach feel worse. Like, it's like actually physically tough to watch some of these games. It's the most intense sport to watch in the playoffs, we all agree, than any other sport. And watching some of those overtime games where they just keep going and going and going can physically F with you. And so I'm trying to mentally
Washington
prepare
series
myself.
Last year wasn't much fun. But yes, for the most part, you're right.
But on the whole, without a doubt, playoff hockey is the most intense. Without a doubt, no question.
Well, it's the one sport that a weird bounce can cost you that... I mean, if you look at that Chicago game six,
the
randomness of where the puck goes off the boards.
Now, quickly, everything can change.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. And, I mean, it's also random in terms of, you know, the favorites don't always win. A lot of times, favorites lose. In fact, neither team in the finals last year, I believe, was the first seed in their conference.
Nashville was the 8, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of randomness to that. What goes on?